Good morning, and welcome to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori on this Saturday morning. How are we doing this morning? So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning right here on WLIW 88.3 FM Southampton, serving Eastern Long Island and Southern Connecticut, 96.9 in Western Suffolk, and streaming at wliw.org/radio and on your favorite streaming platforms. And each show is archived on my website at annliguori.com, that's annliguori.com, and distributed on my podcast on Audioboom and iTunes. Well, on this show, you will hear my conversation with Hall of Fame caddy Joe LaCava, and he describes the nuances of Tiger Woods' magical comeback victory in 2019 to win his fifth Masters title. You know, to hear LaCava, who caddied for Freddie Couples for 20 years, caddied for Tiger for 12 years, and so many other players in his storied caddy career, to hear him relive these magical moments is truly, truly compelling. And I catch up with 1991 Masters champion and 8-time Ryder Cup European player Ian Woosnam as well. And I want to share some very exciting news with you. I have come out with a new book. It is called Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. It is published by Hatherley Press, distributed by Penguin and Random House. And you can get it anywhere, really, online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble. And it comes out in Kindle version as well. And I'm so proud of this book. I was able to sit down with 12 legends of golf, 6 men and 6 women. And it's all about what they learned from their iconic golf careers that they use in their day-to-day life. So the messages are very universal. They're very uplifting, very inspiring in these divisive times in our world and in our sport. I wanted it to be very positive. And these legends from Amy Alcott, Ben Crenshaw, Padraig Harrington, Bernard Longer, Nancy Lopez, Jack Nicklaus, Dottie Pepper, Gary Player, Renee Powell, Annika Sorenstam, Jan Stevenson, and Tom Watson, 6 men, 6 women, they all share sides of them that I had never known before. And, you know, I've been covering golf for 30 years. So each chapter features a different personality, and they all share different wisdom as well that they learned from golf. I didn't even have to kind of maneuver to get them to talk about different lessons. They all came out with their own lessons, and because we learn so much from golf, really. Golf teaches us so much, and whether you're a beginning golfer or an advanced player or not even a golfer at all, I really feel that this book will be very interesting to you because it has universal themes that are very uplifting. For instance, Gary Player, 88 years young, talks about pursuing your passion. Why not, right? Pursue your passion in all that you do. And he exercises every day to this day, and he eats well. And so he talks, there's so many messages in Gary Player's chapter. Annika Sorenstam talks about the fact that there are no shortcuts to success. She tells great stories about how she learned that as a teenager in Sweden. And obviously it worked for her as she is the winningest female golfer there is. And she talks about the importance of patience. She learned that on the golf course and how that carries over to her as a mother of 2. So many great messages. Jack Nicklaus talks about putting family first. He talks about the importance of integrity and sportsmanship. Amy Alcott, she advises all of us to be the captain of our own ship. There are a lot of great stories in each chapter, and I think you're really going to enjoy Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. And I hope you enjoy this edition of Sports Interview. Welcome back to Talking Golf with Anne Liguori, coming to you from the Augusta National Media Center here in Augusta, Georgia, for the beginning of my favorite week of the year in golf, the Masters. And I am so excited to say hello to legendary caddy Joe LaCava, Hall of Famer. Joe caddied for a variety of champions, but is most known for caddying for Freddie Couples for 20 years, from 1990 to 2010, carrying the bag for Freddie's Masters win in 92. And then in 2011, When Tiger parted ways with Steve Williams, Joe and Tiger connected on what would be a 12-year run in which Tiger won 12 worldwide tournaments and his 15th major title, the 2019 Masters. And Joe will be caddying for Patrick Cantlay for the first time here at the Masters. Joe and Patrick Cantlay connected last May. Lots to get to, Joe. First of all, welcome to Talking Golf. I'm so happy that you're on.
Well, Ann, thanks. It's good to hear your voice, and always good to be with you. And it's my favorite week by far of the year, too, so I'm jacked up.
I bet you're jacked up. Can you first describe the feeling that you get when you drive down Magnolia Lane heading to the Augusta National Golf Club?
You know, as caddies, we always look forward to this week. You know, I don't want to get all Jim Nance on us, but the tradition, just everything about the place, you know, how they've treated us over the years has gotten better and better each and every year, which is incredible for us. And again, it's just a special moment, special spot, special week, because you know that your player, they may not admit this, and it may not be the case for everyone, but I'm pretty sure 90% of the guys would say this is the tournament they want to win. And we as caddies know that, and we as caddies probably, it's our favorite to win too with our players. So everyone's jacked up as soon as they hit the grounds at Augusta National. It's an incredible week.
Well, you've been caddying for 25-plus Masters, right? I mean, that you're catching up to me. This is my 26th Masters covering it. And are the feelings, that excitement, as intense all these years later as when you first drove down Magnolia Lane?
For sure, Ann. I think when I was younger, you kind of took it for granted. You know, and I was fortunate enough to work for Fred, like you said, starting in 1990. And then when he won in 92, you know, as you know, you're exempt, you know, they say for life, whatever that might be, 60, 65, whatever it is. So, you know, when you're caddying for someone like Fred and you feel like the relationship is good, you know, you think you're going to be there every year. And that's not the case for everyone. You know, I've been fortunate to work for Fred for 20 years in Tiger 10 plus and worked a lot of years at Augusta for those guys. But as I grow older, you know, knowing my days are kind of numbered, you know, I find myself with a little more appreciation, enjoying the week a little bit more. You know, you're still competitive. You still want your guy to win, obviously, but you're also going to take it all in and enjoy it. You know, like I said, as a kid or as a 20-something-year-old, you kind of took it for granted. But I absolutely love the place.
You love the place. And speaking of Freddie, he's just ageless. I mean, he became the oldest person to make the cut last year. 63 years, 6 months, 5 days, still going strong. So what's your favorite part about being in the center of the universe this week at Augusta National, would you say?
You know, I think, you know, you can't wait for Thursday to come around. But at the same time, like I just got through saying, you want to soak up the practice rounds. You know, we as caddies normally don't work the par three, but that's fun for me, even from afar, to see the kids come in and work, or the friends, whatever it might be, work for the players and caddy for the players. So Wednesday's a fun day as well. And obviously when I worked for Tiger, we played practice rounds with Fred, so that was always fun for me to spend some quality time with Fred. And we don't sit there and reminisce so much about 92, but we kind of, you know, we kind of look back at it, and we're both happy it happened, obviously, and we have a few fond memories from that week. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, even though, you know, as a caddy, you're working pretty hard, and it's a tough golf course to walk, certainly as you get older. But, you know, just everything about it, Monday through Sunday, I absolutely love. And then obviously once the gun goes off on Thursday, the adrenaline goes, you know, straight through the roof, and you're so jacked up on that first tee. It's just an amazing feeling.
So are you at the par three competition? Are you just kind of watching it live, or do you watch it on TV, or what do you do that day?
You know, we usually practice in the morning, and then we'll do some practicing early in the afternoon. And then, you know, in our caddy hut, you'll see the kids come in and get their uniforms on and their suits on. So it's fun just to see the kids kind of run around getting ready to caddy for their dads. And it's very exciting for me, you know, as a parent and stuff like that. And then we'll sit, maybe have a beer in the caddy shack, and watch the par three. And it's incredible to see, you know, Jack and everyone else playing that thing and still play well. So it's a lot of fun for us caddies.
Well, I obviously want to talk about Tiger's incredible win at the Masters in 2019. At that point, he had won four Masters titles, you know, before that in 97, 2001, 2002, 2005. And then the road kind of after 2005 and when you connected with him in, what, 2011 and beyond, was really, One of intense controversy and many, many injuries for Tiger. I know he had, what, four back surgeries by 2017, and then he got into that. He was arrested in Florida in May of 2017, when police discovered him asleep at the wheel of his car. And by September of 2017, he was cleared by doctors to begin swinging a club again. And I can remember him saying back then that it was possible that his career might be over. So just take us through those years, Joe, if you would, leading up to the 2019 Masters for Tiger, and then I'll obviously ask you about that Masters. But what were the years like, kind of leading up to that improbable win in 2019?
Yeah, and I must say I'd be lying if I said they were great. There was plenty of dark moments and doubts for both of us. I'll go back as far as 12 and 13, which was my first, two full years with Tiger when he was pretty healthy. And he won 8 times. He was player of the year, I think, the second year in 13 when he won 5 times. So first couple of years, things were going great. I thought, this is pretty automatic. This guy's like a machine, like we talked about and stuff like that. And then kind of came, like you said, the surgeries and stuff like that, 4 or 5 surgeries over the course of 4 or 5 years. And, I know he was struggling, obviously. I wasn't struggling per se in terms of down in the press, but it was a bummer to be home and not doing much. But I loved Tiger so much and I believed in him so much that I wanted to wait it out. And, I kind of volunteered to wait it out because he kind of gave me the go ahead and do whatever I want if I wanted to try to caddy for someone else. But, I stuck to my guns and wanted to keep with Tiger, which in the end, obviously, it worked out okay. But when 17 rolled around, like you mentioned, he didn't play one time on tour. The only tournament he actually played was his own tournament at the Hero in the Bahamas. I will say this, though, because there wasn't a whole lot to do in 17 in terms of going down there to help Tiger in any way that I could, like I had in years past, because it was basically just a year of recovery. But when I did see him in the Bahamas and he played, the scores weren't incredible, but I could tell the way he was moving around and the way he was hitting the ball and the power that he had. That's when I realized in December of 17, I don't think this guy's done. And obviously he proved me right when he had that great year in 18. He came close a couple times at a couple majors and then finally won at the end of the year at the Tour Championship. It was an incredible moment. I guess what I got to tell people the most is, even though I wasn't there all the time, I was there enough, meaning in Florida, to see what he was going through, not only on the golf course trying to get his game back, but in the gym and in the rehab and stuff like that. The guy obviously has an incredible work ethic. I don't think if someone had the work ethic that he had, they couldn't get through it, because I don't think anyone could. But he's a very determined person. The good news is he loves being in the gym, so it's almost like second nature for him, and that's kind of his job. So when he got done with 18, I wasn't thinking, okay, he's going to win the Masters next year. But obviously there's light at the end of the tunnel, knowing that he played well the entire season in 18, capped it off with that win, and had some momentum going into 19.
That's right. And he even finished runner-up to Koepka in that PGA Championship in 2018.
Right.
Before the Tour Championship. So he definitely had some momentum. But still, it just seems so improbable. And so that final round at the Masters, Sunday, April 14th, 2019. Now, ironically, the final round this year is on a Sunday, April 14th.
There you have it.
I don't know if that means anything.
No, I didn't even realize. I didn't put that together, but that's a nice touch.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? So anyway, so I remember, that day, play began very early. They got everybody out like at 7:30. Threesomes went off on holes 1 and 10. Tiger had shot a 67 in the third round. And then he starts the final round 2 shots behind Francesco Molinari. And what was his mindset back then, Joe? Do you remember? Was it any different than before? Did you notice?
Well, I think, I'll start by saying, like you just touched on, I think we got a little bit of a break in the fact that they moved the tee times up, which obviously Augusta doesn't want to do it. They want to have their 7 o'clock finish in prime time. And I get that. But I guess the storms that were looming were so bad they had no other choice for the safety of people. So we catch a break in the fact that we are now going from the second to last group in a twosome to the last group in a threesome. And we're playing with, like you said, Francesco, who's leading, and Tony, who I think is tied with Tiger for second place. So that was a big deal, I thought, for us, because it's a little different situation when you're playing with Tiger. You're playing with him in the last group. The crowd, even though at Augusta, obviously not pulling against anyone, but they're clearly pulling for Tiger to win this thing. So So that was a big deal for us, I thought. And I love the fact that, like you said, Tiger shot 67 on Saturday, played well, had some momentum going. He didn't have to sit around until 3 o'clock and think about it and so on and so forth. We're just going to get up early the next morning and get after it. And the good news is Tiger can play good golf on 5 minutes of sleep. So that wasn't a concern as well. But, you know, I could tell when he came I met him in the parking lot in the mornings. I could tell when he came to the parking lot, he was all business. I mean, he could still, you know, throw a smile out there and have a little bit of fun. We did have a little bit of fun on the range. He's got to keep things loose a little bit. But I could tell he was going to be all business that day, and he was.
Wow. And so, you know, you think of that final round, and there were six players that had at least a share of the lead. You had Woods, Molinari, Cantley, Johnson, Xander, Schauffele, Brooks Koepka. And Koepka, you know, had been so strong in the majors. He had won three of, what, the previous seven that had been played at that point, leading to the 2019 Masters. And so Tiger gets out there, and were your thoughts ever? He bogeys 4 and 5, and so now he's 3 behind at that point.
Yeah, not quite the start we were looking for, obviously. You know, he actually made a pretty good 2-putt at number 2 just to make par because he hit it left and had a chip out. And then he had a beautiful 4-iron kind of the front center and had kind of a, you know, probably a 50 or 55-footer, somewhat of a tricky putt, probably a putt you're not going to practice too many times to that pin because you're thinking you're going to probably wedge it in there close. So to his credit, makes a nice 2-putt there to kind of save par, which, you know, if you bogey 2, you're really kind of losing strokes to the field. And he comes back with a nice birdie on 3. But like you said, bogeys 4 and 5 and 5 for the fourth day in a row. Finally hit the green, actually. Hit the fairway and the green and 3-putted. But he actually, there's a bathroom over there on up to 6-tee, and he kind of went in there and gave himself a little bit of a pep talk. Because like I said, it's not the start that you want. And now you're 3 back and you're 4 holes in, 5 holes in, so you only got 13 holes left. And he came out, same thing. He's obviously running a little bit hot, but not disgusted. He kind of regrouped, got his focus back, hit a beautiful shot on 6, and then he birdied 7 and 8 and kind of off to the races. So I think that little pep talk he gave himself in the bathroom, I didn't have to say anything, and just give himself to refocus and get, you know, positive vibes again was a big help.
And so what were you thinking on the 11th hole when you were seeing that theatrics at that point of the players in front of you who were doing their thing on 12?
Yes, my sort of thing on 11 is once my guy has hit his shot into the green, you know, the job's not over. We still got to worry about the 11th hole. But you automatically, for those 200 yards, you're going to peek over and see what's going on at 12. And, of course, I did that. And people always ask me, did Tiger pay attention? Did he say anything? You know, I can see him looking over there, but nothing needs to be discussed. We can both clearly see that, you know, Ian Poulter came up short, was in the water taking a drop, and so was Brooks. And I think Webb Simpson was over the green. So I immediately say to myself, okay, I can't feel a lot of wind right now on the 11th hole. But having said all that, those guys are world-class players. So the first two guys probably went first, didn't hit enough club, or they got fooled by the wind. And then Webb probably took one extra club and went over the green. So you know something tricky is going on up there, even though you can't actually feel it. So we get done with 11. You know, Tiger makes a nice par. And Francesco's first up on 12. And Tiger and I, at this point, Tiger and I have already discussed the numbers, and we already have our club picked out. We know it's going to be a 9-iron, and he's going to go 30 to 40 feet left of the hole like he always does, regardless of the position he's in the tournament. I think he feels, without talking about it, you know, that's not where you win the tournament, that's where you can lose the tournament. It's a par hole to him, certainly with that pin anyways. And if he's 2 back, he doesn't feel like he needs to go after the pin there. There's still plenty of holes to make up that 2-shot margin. And so to watch a guy in front of you hit an 8-iron in the water short, and now you're going to hit one less club, you're thinking to myself, maybe there's some doubt. But he never had any doubt. He stuck to his guns. The one thing that I think it helped with Tiger was I think he hit a little bit more of a full 9-iron than he normally would have had he been up there first. But to see Molinari come up short with an 8-iron, that made him hit it harder. And then as he hits it about 3/4 of the way there, you can kind of see it stall out a little bit. You know, never in a panic mode where it's not going to get over the water. But at the same time, you can see it stall out. But he hit it solid enough and full enough where it's going to get on the green. And then he capped that by making a nice – he probably came up 6 or 7 feet short on the birdie putt, and he made a nice 6 or 7 footer for par. And then we were off to the races. That was the first time that I said to myself, okay, You don't want to get ahead of yourself.
If you love soccer, you gotta love the New York Red Bulls. The squad is back and in need of your support out at Red Bull Arena in Harrison, New Jersey. The team is loaded with stars, including new midfield captain Emil Forsberg, alongside his teammates, defender Sean Nealis and goalkeeper Carlos Coronel. Matches start at 7:30 p.m., and you can get your tickets at Ticketmaster.com. We're going big this season, and we're gonna do it together. Make sure you download the New York Red Bulls app today and stay connected. Red Bull fans, let's go!
The 2024 Mazda CX-50 feels like a premium vehicle without the premium price. The Mazda CX-50 is packed with tons of safety features like lane keep assist, smart brake support, and an available 360-degree camera that makes this SUV easy to drive. The Mazda CX-50 has a durable yet luxurious interior with great features like climate-controlled seats, Apple CarPlay, and Android Auto. Visit your local Mazda dealer or MazdaUSA.com to experience the 2024 Mazda CX-50 today.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/sportsfan and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
Must be 21 plus and physically present in New York. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. For help with a gambling problem, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-369 or visit oasas.ny.gov/gambling. Standard text messaging rates apply. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited.
You're on the 13th tee, but I said to myself, if Tiger can hit some fairways here, which I know he's going to, it's his tournament to be had, because I consider him the best iron player of all time, and we're going to have nothing but middle irons into all these holes coming in, and that's his bread and butter.
We are talking to Joe LaCava, who caddied for Tiger Woods when Tiger won the 2019 Masters. And then, Joe, I'm so glad you're on Talking Golf. It's just so great to hear your memory and your description of what's really going on with all of this. You know, Tiger takes the outright lead with a birdie on 15 and just never relinquished his lead after that. Molinari, he double bogeyed there.
Yeah, a little surprising that Francesco, you know, kind of, you know, it's easy now, but I mean, I guess you don't really anticipate hitting the ball that high from that short a distance, but you know, before Francesco hits his third shot into 15, Tiger hits a beautiful 5-iron from 227 yards, pin high, maybe 40 feet right of the hole. I tell people he basically made a 2 there. And so if you're Francesco, you think to yourself, okay, you know, he's going to 2-putt this thing and make birdie, and he's going to take a 1-up lead on me. So you kind of – he's not forcing the issue, but in order to get it close to that pin when you lay it up to the left like Francesco did, you're going to have to hit it pretty high and pretty soft, because you don't want to create too much spin where it's going to come off the green. So I think he's trying to hit something that comes in high and soft, maybe takes one hop and stops. And when you do that, obviously, you know, you hit it a little bit higher than you might normally do, and that's when he hit the tree, and it goes in the water. I wasn't anticipating that. I don't think anyone was, but obviously it was a break for us. And then Tiger converts a nice 2-putt for birdie to take a 1-shot lead. And again, now he's got some momentum. Now he's first on the next hole. And then we have a nice number on 16 for a full 8-iron for Tiger. He can go ahead and hit this thing. He probably can't hit it past the hole. He can rip an 8-iron, which was a nice, comfortable number for a big, solid 8-iron for Tiger.
And I remember reading where you said on 16, you thought that's probably as calm as you'd ever seen Tiger on a golf course. His ball landed, what, 3 feet from the cup. And he said, not that I've ever seen him antsy, but there was certainly a calmness and a confidence that he was going to get this thing done.
Yeah, I saw it in other tournaments working for him, obviously. I hadn't quite seen it in that big of a moment. And I'll go back to 15. Tiger hits a beautiful drive down the right center of the fairway. He's got 227. So as it turns out, it's a perfect 5-iron for him. But for whatever reasons, you know, we have a little bit of a weight there, which is absolutely no fun. But you got a 5-iron on your hand on a tight lie, knowing – you know, if you thin this thing a little bit, goes over the green, and that chip is zero fun. And obviously, if you hit a little bit heavy, it comes up in the water, and you can make whatever. So I felt myself getting a little antsy in the 15th fairway, and I'll never forget this look he gave me. because I'm kind of looking up at the clubhouse to see that big USA flag to see what's doing, because sometimes you can't always tell what the wind's doing down there. And it really wasn't blowing much. And I remember kind of circling around, getting antsy because Brooks was putting, and I'll never forget the look Tiger gave without saying a word. But I could read his mind almost just to say, don't worry, Joe, I got this thing covered. I've been here 100 times. So that kind of calmed me down a little bit, which was kind of cool.
And then he just stripes his tee shot on 17. You said it was the best shot of the tournament for Tiger.
You know, for me, it was. I mean, it's not Tiger's favorite driving hole. you know, it is. It's a fairly tight hole. It calls for, you know, more or less a straight shot, which isn't always the most fun shot. Obviously, you can draw it or cut it, but I mean, it kind of sets up for a straight ball. Tiger hit this 1 foot cut, very, very solid. And, you know, I knew he hit it very well and very solid. He picked up that tee right away. And again, very confident, you know, been there, done this. But when we get up to the fairway and he's a yard past Tony Finau, who that hadn't been the case all day. Obviously, there's some adrenaline there, and just tells you how solid he hit it in a clutch moment like that. And then once he hit that shot, we had a nice, comfortable 9-iron there. He hit it about 12, 15 feet. So he was firing on all cylinders for sure.
And Koepka missed a birdie attempt, and I think it was at that point that you knew all he needed, you know, was a bogey on 18, and he would still win, right?
Yeah, when we're playing 17, obviously Brooks, I think, hit it pretty close on 17. But when we're on 17T, you know, my thought as a caddy is, if you do the math, Brooks is probably longer than Tiger. So I'm thinking to myself, he's probably going to have a wedge in the 17 or wedge or 9-iron in the 18. So I feel like he's going to give himself two good chances. And like you said earlier, I didn't realize this, but he won three of the previous seven majors. So obviously he's a world-class player. So I'm anticipating at least one birdie, maybe two. But he doesn't birdie 17, and then with Tiger par 17, we got a nice lead there, and he doesn't. And then once Brooks pars 18, not like you said, now we know we just got to make a five.
Wow! And what was it like for you? I mean, we saw Tiger's emotions, hugging his kids and his mom, but what about your emotions when he closed it out for his fifth green jacket?
Yeah, listen, it's an incredible feeling. You know, I go back to 92 when Fred did it. Again, I took it for granted. And like I said, as you get older, you appreciate it more. You know, Tiger's a little bit older now. You know, so two things that I'll never forget, you know, on that green was, you know, when Tiger's done congratulating with the other players and caddies, he comes to me and hugs me. But as he's coming to me for a hug, he says, "We did it." Now, in today's world, a lot of caddies and players are very good friends. But I don't know how many guys are going to say we did it first thing out of their mouth. So for him to say that, and then on top of that, he completely means it. You know, for me, the time that I worked for him, I felt like it was more friend and buddy versus caddy. I wasn't his employee, and he never treated me like that. You know what I mean? First and foremost, I was a friend. So for him to say that on 18 Green was incredible, and even more incredible the fact that he 100% meant it. And then the moment got even better when he goes to the back of the green and hugs his kids and his mom, which to me is incredible. Came full circle from the time they won for the first time in 97 with his parents there. So, you know, as a parent of a couple of kids, I can appreciate that moment and how special it was for him and the kids.
That's just amazing. I mean, I could talk about this like for all week, but let's move on a little bit here. Tiger, he came in for a practice round about a week ago, played with Augusta National Chairman Fred Ridley, played with his buddy Justin Thomas. Do you think Tiger at this stage, knowing what has been going on all year, he hasn't really played competitively in an official tournament other than the Genesis Invitational, and he only played one round in six holes, and then withdrew because of the flu. But can Tiger win another Masters title at this point, do you think, Joe?
You know, I never say never. I wouldn't put it past the guy. You know, I talked to him a little bit. We talk, you know, a decent amount via text these days, but I talked to him a little bit in person at LA. And I think, you know, the most important thing for him is he's in a lot less pain on a day-to-day basis, which I think will allow him to practice some more, even though, like you just said, he hasn't played anything but basically the Genesis. I think down the road, he can practice more. He can maybe play a little bit more. And I'm sure he's been practicing at home pretty hard. It's his favorite tournament of all time, so I wouldn't put anything past him. I mean, is it going to be tough, you know, with all these world-class players, Scottie Scheffler, so on and so forth, playing, you know, pretty much every week, playing well and practicing? Of course they have the upper hand, not to mention the age. But, you know, you never count Tiger out of anything, that's for sure.
Well, let's talk about the guy you're canning for this week, Patrick Cantlay. His best finish this year is tied for fourth at the Genesis. In 2019, his best finish was tied for ninth at the Masters. What does Patrick need to do to win this week?
Well, I think, you know, like everybody, I mean, he's going to have a short game, you know, he's going to have an A-plus short game. You know, there's so much feel around these greens, and I think Pat's in the point of his career where he's played Augusta National enough that he knows, you know, how to get balls up and down on the greens, how to two-putt from, you know, from crazy putts on those greens. I think he certainly drives it well enough. As you know, he's one of the best drivers on the tour. He's certainly long enough, and he's certainly straight enough. And obviously, he's got a nice iron game. So I think it's going to come down to a short game for Pat. And the good news for me is he's one of the greatest pitchers and chippers of the ball that I've ever seen. So, you know, I like his chances as much as anyone. I know he's been home working hard for 3 weeks. And, you know, we've talked about the fact that, you know, for me anyways, I think you need all parts of your game to be clicking at Augusta National. But I think it's important that you have great touch and feel around the greens, and he does have that.
Now, would you have wanted him to play in the last week or two to come in with, you know, more competitive play leading into this week?
Yeah, I mean, you can look at it both ways. I mean, he's going to come off 3 weeks off, but at the same time, you know, we had a pretty busy West Coast schedule, played 5 of the 7 events, and then he played the 2 weeks in Florida. So I think it's up to each individual. You know, you got to kind of know your body and your mind. I mean, I think he was ready for, you know, a physical and mental break, which I'm fine with. And, you know, he tossed around the idea of playing this week. And I told him, he says, what do you think? I said, listen, I'm not with you right now. You got to do what's best for, you know, like I just talked about, best for you both mentally and physically. If you feel like you need a little more time to rest and get ready at home, then I'm all for that. You know, it's kind of one of those things where you have to make your own call. You know, like Phil back in the day always wanted to play the week before because he felt like he was in, you know, game mode and competitive and stuff like that. Guy like Tiger never played the week before, so you can't argue with either guy. They both had a lot of success in majors. So it's just kind of up to the individual.
So what's it like canning for him, say, compared to Tiger or Freddie?
You know, it's similar in terms of the way they play the game. They, you know, they all have some power. You know, their MO is to kind of eat up the par fives. And, you know, they're going to do well, obviously, when they putt well. You could say that about everybody. You know, I mean, Pat's pretty stoic, but I think he's pretty emotional inside. He cares a lot. He may not just show it. Obviously, Tiger's going to show it to you and wear it on his sleeve. And Fred's kind of somewhere in between. But in terms of working for them on the golf course, you know, they're great to me. They're pretty easy to work for. You know, with Pat, I'm reading a few more putts, which I'm so jacked up about because I love to read putts. So I think I'm in the game a little bit more on the green, which I absolutely love. And I think the sky's the limit for Pat, and the best stuff for him is ahead.
Is reading the greens the way you do, is that a talent that you're born with, Joe, or does it develop with more and more experience?
You know, that's actually a pretty good question. I feel like you're born with it for the most part. Can you get better at it if, you know, if you caddy a lot or just read your own green and stuff like that? Maybe so. You know, most of the guys I play with, all my buddies, you know, they read them okay. They're not bad at it. But I tell people, you guys are out here kind of blowing off steam and getting away from work. So you're not here to grind. See, like my job's to grind. So I enjoy grinding and reading greens and stuff like that. I think, you know, I don't know. I grew up playing golf a little bit and played a little bit of high school golf, but I don't feel like I've gotten better over the years caddying. I just think I've always been a halfway decent green reader, and it's just something you kind of have or you don't have.
Well, I am blessed to have a front row seat to watch and talk about extraordinary performances in sport. But you, my friend, have more than a front row seat. You're right there in the action and have been such a huge part of all the history. It's just incredible. Do you ever pinch yourself? A kid from Connecticut who has been so close and so much a part of this incredible history.
Yeah, you know, and that's also another good point. Yeah, you know, sometimes I do. I look back and say, wow, I can't believe I worked for Tiger for whatever it was, 10, 11, 12 years and over 100 tournaments, and was fortunate enough to be there when he won the Masters and won TPC. And same thing with Freddie, won the Masters and it was, you know, player of the year a couple times. And, you know, it's like I said, I've been fortunate in a couple respects. The fact that I've worked for nothing but, you know, Hall of Famers, great players. And then on top of that, which is probably even the better part of it, is, you know, I've worked for great guys that I've gotten along with and I've done a lot of fun stuff with. So I guess as I get older, maybe when I'm done, I'll appreciate it more. But I think I do appreciate it along the way. And again, I've been very fortunate to work for these guys.
Well, you have to write a book. I know you can't, but you have to. Because the stories you must have and all the memories that you really do. I mean, there's so much to remember, and you do remember it pretty well, right? You're not forgetting any major points or stories. You just probably just can't tell them.
Well, I mean, you know, I can share some with, you know, buddies over a couple beers, that kind of thing. And there's, like you said, there's plenty of good, funny stories. And I've had so many laughs with all the guys. And it's fun because, you know, for me, it doesn't always happen this way. But, you know, when I went to work for Tiger, you know, Fred and I have remained the best of friends. And, you know, I went to work for Pat recently. You know, Tiger and I have become probably even closer. And we talk about the kids more and stuff like that. So it's nice that all the relationships are still there. They ended well, and everything was great in between. So, again, you know, very, very fortunate here. But, yeah, incredible. I mean, to share some of these stories and what I've seen and done has been crazy good.
Well, I can't thank you enough for sharing some of these stories and memories with us. Continued success, Joe LaCava. And have
thank
fun
you.
Out here this week at Augusta National.
Thanks, Dan. I'm really looking forward to it.
Thanks so much. My guest is the legendary Ian Woosman, winner of the Masters in 1991, a member of 8 straight Ryder Cup teams for Europe, and captain of the 2006 European team that beat the U.S. at the K Club in Ireland.
Thanks, Anne. Yeah, looking forward to talking to you.
So you were at Augusta National last week, and tell me about the week. I know you were at the Champions Dinner as well.
Yeah, I just went up there a few days before, played a few different golf courses, and then, you know, we always have the pleasure of able to take someone on the Sunday before the tournament starts. So I took a friend around with me, and funny enough, I played quite well that day, shot 71. So obviously it wasn't as windy as what it was when the guys were playing, but I really enjoyed that. I managed to walk around the course okay as well. But then, went to the Champions Dinner, which is always a pleasure, and especially with being John Rahm as the winner, and the food was magnificent, the tapas, the steak, the fish, I had a bit of everything, and the wine. Gotta have the wine, haven't you?
I saw the photograph. It's always great to see all the champions together, and did everybody get along? That's what everybody wants to ask me. You were right in that very room, Ian. Did the LIV players and the PGA Tour players, did they all seem talkative with each other? Was there some camaraderie in the room?
The year before was most probably more difficult for the guys, because it was more, things are more happening then. And I thought there was more tense the year before that. But this time, you guys were talking. It just there was more stories about Seve. Seve Ballesteros, and you know, it was his birthday that day, and some of the Spanish guys told some stories about Seve, and there's remembrance about Seve's playing in the Masters and being what a wonderful player he was.
So no juice.
No, nothing to report.
Well, John Rahm had said after Sunday's final round that he thought there was some tension between him and several PGA Tour players, but you didn't see any of that.
I suppose there, you know, I wasn't in the locker room all week. Maybe there was, and, you know, I didn't see it at the dinner anyway. You know, I don't really get into that business. If I was most probably playing on the tour, it might be a different situation. But as more of a standby, I didn't feel there was any tension.
So you were there for a couple of days. Then you went back to Barbados, where you've lived for some 30 years. We'll talk about Apes Hill, Barbados in a second, where you are the global ambassador for that luxury golf and real estate community. But what were your thoughts about Scottie Scheffler's win? I mean, 4-shot win. He just leads in seemingly every statistical category. The guy's unbelievable.
It was quite interesting. You could see the guys who were up there, who had the ball under control, what I would say. And, you know, if you haven't got the ball under control at Augusta, you're not going to get anywhere near winning the tournament. And, I think that's what Scotty's done over the last, you know, 2 or 3 years. Basically, he's, you know, his iron play is so much better than anybody else's at the moment. And as soon as he gets a little bit hot with the putter, he's going to win by a margin every time. And you Caramau with Colin, he was doing well with his irons, getting the ball into the right position. But fortunately for him, he just fell away a little bit. I do think one of the players who really played well was Tommy Fleetwood. He hit some magnificent irons, but he just doesn't seem to haul enough of putts. And if he wants to win a major, he just needs to putt a little bit better, I feel.
It just seems like Tommy Fleetwood is always there on the, you know, final, in the final round, just always contending. But as you say, just hasn't closed it out yet. And what about Ludvig Åberg, the, you know, the majors rookie coming in second in his very first Masters? That was an impressive performance.
Absolutely. You got to love this kid. You know, he hits a bad shot. He took a double and he just smiles. You know what I mean? And to have an attitude at that young, to be that sort of cool and, you know, no, doesn't sort of look, get himself under pressure. And, you know, you're looking at it now, he, you know, with his attitude and the way he swings the club and he hits the ball, and you can only see him getting better and better. But his main thing is the way he goes, his approach to the game of golf. It's, he makes Ernie Els look like he's got a bad temper, you know.
He doesn't waste any time. I mean, he decides what club he's going to hit. Then he goes up there and he just hits the ball and he executes so beautifully. And you're right. I mean, he was always smiling. He just seemed like he was having a great time. I mean, the kid, it was his first major championship. I know he's already won on the PGA Tour and the European Tour, but he's going to be somebody to watch. I think he's going to be pushing Scottie Scheffler in the future, don't you?
It's his first time there. I think he took the attitude is that, you know, I'm going to enjoy this. And, you know, it turned out, you know, really great for him. And, you know, when you play good there, if you play good at the Masters the first time, you know, you're going to play well there again. So we're going to see a lot of him, going to see a lot of him in the Ryder Cups. Well, if there's still going to be a Ryder Cup, you got to talk about that as well. And it's interesting that, you know, he could be the next superstar, but but what's so brilliant, as you say, he plays fastly. The game of golf seems to be getting a little bit faster than it used to be. They're getting on with it a bit better. And I think that's great for the kids, watching someone stand up there, you know, a bit like I used to in the olden days, is just stand there. You know what club you're going to hit. It's going to be a 5-iron or a 6-iron. You just got to make your mind up and see the shot and hit it. And that's what he's doing.
And what did you think about the conditions? I know you said you played, it wasn't quite as windy on the Sunday before, but boy, that Friday, Ian, I've never seen, having covered 26 Masters, I've never seen the wind like that. I mean, there were 40-mile-an-hour wind gusts and sand was flying up on the green. And I just thought it was, just over the top with the wind.
It was right on the edge where, you know, I would have been interested to see what the officials were saying, where they're going to stop it. But, you know, we didn't see really much movement on the ball, maybe once or something. But, you know, if it was happening a lot, they would have stopped it. And, you know, that's what, you're a professional golfer. You got to learn to play in every single condition, and that's what they had to do. And you know, that's why the scoring was how it was and everything. But what it did is made the tournament very exciting, having that Friday like that.
We're talking to Ian Woosman, the winner at the Masters in 1991, and Ian, you beat Jose Maria Olazabal by one shot, and you and Olazabal and Tom Watson, he was 41 years old at the time, Tom Watson, but you're all tied for the lead going into the 72nd hole. What are your memories from that final round?
Well, interesting. You know, we stood on the 18th tee and I could see Olazabal in front and he'd gone in the bunker and then into the bunker up just short of the green. And I pretty well knew he'd taken five, and then Tom Watson stood on the tee for quite a while. And you know, for me, it was either a driver or a 2-iron. Tom decided to, he stood there for ages and decided to hit 3 when carved it into the trees on the right. And, you know, which was, for me, it was just a big mistake, really. But that just let me, and I always had my game plan. I was just going to smash it down the fairway. And if it went on the wind, right to left, carry that bunker into, so there's the old practice ground down there. And the hardest thing I had was trying to move the patrons to try and get a shot into the second into the, for my second shot. And yeah, Tom had a great second shot into the bunker where Alasbel was, short left. And you know, I was going in with an 8 iron. I just came on the fringe of the green, and you know, it was like in slow motion because it was taking such a long time. And Tom came up and he bladed it a little bit out of the bunker and went to the back of the green. And typical Tom Watson, I thought it was going to go straight down the hole. You know, it landed so close to the hole, but it bounced on. And yeah, and then I got my third shot, and you know, it's just off the fringe of the green on the left, a little slope. And I'm thinking, wow, there's grains against me. I don't want to do anything stupid here. I don't want to try and chip it and duff it. So I decided to put it, and you know, it wandered its way up and went off to about 7 foot to the right. And you know, Tom missed his putt and charged it past a little bit. And I was fortunate to sort of have a situation at that 7 footer. If I missed it, and you know, I was going to be in a playoff with Jose Maria and Lanny Watkins, but I managed to knock it in, you know, right to left. It couldn't have been any better for myself. And yeah, and that was it. Masters great champion.
Great memories. I know you were a member of 8 straight Ryder Cup teams for Europe. You captained the 2006 European team that beat the U.S. at the K Club. Boy, I remember that. That the weather there was horrendous that week, but Europe prevailed under your leadership, 18.5 to 9.5. Luke Donald will lead the European team next year at Bethpage Black right here on Long Island. And, you know, I really liked what I saw from Luke Donald in last fall at Marco Simone as the European Cup team captain. He just seems like a terrific leader, very smart, and the players really like him.
Well, I think the beauty about Luke is he's very calm and doesn't get over too excited jumping around like some of us have done before. But yeah, and I think it's been a great move to have him do it again at Black Page, because you know, it's going to be a bit rowdy there and jumping around. And I think he's going to be a guy who can keep their partnerships together and their attitude together. And you know, as I say, it's going to be a bit rowdy, and hopefully he can put his influence being calm towards the players as well.
And so are your thoughts about the LIV players being able to play in the 2025 Ryder Cup at Bethpage?
Well, you know, for us, you know, we obviously were it's a very difficult situation. We've obviously got our best 10 players who go over to the PGA Tour every year. So we have them to choose from, but it all depends. You know, we also got to give the guys the chance to play from the DP Tour in Europe and as well. But then you obviously, we got European players who are in the LIV. And obviously there hasn't been any agreement to let them in at the moment. My own personal feeling, it should be. Some sort of way we could get them into the team, or even some of the guys who have been players have given so much to the Ryder Cup could be like the captain, like the likes of Westwood, Poulter, you know. They've given such a lot to it. I know this is something, but you know, I can understand going to LIV when you're a little bit older and taking the money, but you know, as a younger man, it's a little bit more different. But you know, it's, if we don't see, you know, our best players playing against the Americans, it just could slip away.
I know the European team will be made up from the top three eligible players from the European points list, the top three eligible players from the world points list, and then 6 captains picks. And the U.S. team's made up from the top 6 eligible players in the points rankings with 6 captains picks. So I know John Rahm, during the Masters press conference, said he hopes to make the team based on points. I wonder if that's even possible if he's a member of LIV.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, well, only way they're going to make points is be in the majors, isn't it, really? So, like, you know, you're talking about 3 guys from the DP Tour who get in from the Order of Merit. But, you know, that's the only way. But getting on the world ranking points, you know, our tour has gone so low on world ranking points now. So, you know, that's going to be very difficult. You're not playing in America. You're not going to pick them big points up. So, them, it's going to be very important for them. 6 choices for Luke. I can see that. And that'll most probably come, you know, straight from the PGA Tour. I can't, that's the only way I can see that really happening.
I know Roy McIlroy voiced his opinion when Jon Rahm left for LIV and said, yes, he definitely wants to see Jon Rahm on that Ryder Cup team.
Well, exactly. You know, you want one of the best players in the world. You want him to be there. And, you know, it's, as I say, you know, I can understand it when you're an older man or a younger, older player and you come into your field, like you only got another 5, 6, 7 years. It's, I can understand going, but, you know, it is growing. It's getting bigger. And I just hope sometime they get it sorted so we can all get back together and play against each other, because golf is about competing about the best player, and you want to play against the best players in the world, and it's not happening at the moment. It did at the Masters, but hopefully in the future they can sort something out. I do hope so anyway, so for the sake of golf, really, as they say.
As they say, right? Well, I know you're having a great time in Barbados. You've been named the ambassador for Apes Hill Barbados, which is a luxury golf and real estate community. Tell me about it.
Yeah, it's obviously Barbados. It's probably one of the highest points in Barbados. So when you get up there, it's, you can, when you're in sort of like the 12th hole, 13th hole, 14th hole, you can see both sides of the island. You've got the Caribbean side, Caribbean Sea one side, and you've got the Atlantic Sea the other side. And it's a magnificent place. It's just been redesigned. And hopefully, it's a great spot for people to come on holiday, play golf, or even buy a house. And you know, so it's a great honor to be ambassador there.
And the Barbados Legends are going to be there May 3rd through the 5th. It's the first time in, what, 16 years, you were saying?
Absolutely. I can remember when I just turned 50, and that was the first time I played in the Barbados Open as a senior. And as I say, that was, you know, I'm 66. That was 16 years ago. So it's going to be great to be the ambassador of that, of the tournament in on the 3rd to the 5th. And it's brilliant. It's perfectly designed for the seniors. We'll be playing on carts. It'll be one amateur, two pros, and two pro-ams before it. It's going to be an exciting week. So if there's anybody out there who wants to come to Barbados for a holiday and a golfing holiday, come and play in our tournament.
So what led you to Barbados, what, 30 years ago?
At least, you know, I first came over here and played a little golf tournament in 1983. And ever since that, it's a British island. It was, now it's a republic. You know, a lot of British people come here for the winters because the weather's so beautiful. And you know, especially when I've got a bad back, I feel like I can come out here and it helps my back and it helps me play better. And eventually bought a house after, you know, after 10 years of coming out here and owned an house for 10 years. And, you know, my family's been, you know, my young family came here, came with us, and now we've got our grandchildren coming as well. So it's magnificent.
Ian Woosman, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to catch up. Enjoy the Barbados lifestyle, which you obviously are, the Apes Hill Barbados, and always a pleasure to talk to you. I remember that Masters victory, and what a thrill it must have been for you and for all your fans, for sure.
Yeah, thank you very much, Anne, and nice to speak to you.
Thanks so much. My thanks to Joe LaCava, to Ian Woosman, and Mike Goodsoe in production. Have a great day, and I look forward to talking with you next time on Sports Interview with Anne LaGorrie.